Welcome to Challenge Accepted. I'm your host, Stephanie Lucas, a marriage and family therapist by trade and mom to a daughter with hearing loss. I'm creating a space for parents and caregivers of special needs families to find support, validation, and acceptance by sharing stories of a broad range of families with unique challenges. While this isn't therapy and does not replace the advice of a medical provider, we'll dive into the tougher parts of parenting together and join a team of support from others who get it. This next half hour is about you, your experiences, your emotions, and being allowed to take up space as a parent and human being. So hands in, ears on, hearts open, team, this is Challenge Accepted. Hi friends, today I am sharing my interview with Becca Cordes. She is a mama to five beautiful souls, and she shares with us her intimate story of baby loss. If that's a subject that is difficult for you in any way, please take care of yourself. It's okay to skip this one or make sure you listen to it when you have the time and space to let some tears fall. I know I made space for myself around this interview to make sure I could cope with any emotions that came up, and I want to encourage you to do the same. That said, Becca does such a beautiful job sharing her story with us. She learned at her anatomy scan that her son would be born with trisomy 18, an extremely complicated and difficult diagnosis. She shares her passion and efforts to be able to meet her son and how she survived those unimaginable moments. She is an amazing warrior woman who has shared about her journey to give her a voice to so many. Baby loss is a topic that is so vulnerable and sensitive, but it deserves the time and space here so that others can know they are not alone. Of all special needs families, I think those who have walked through a loss and are living with grief hold the most potential for loneliness. There are no appointments to chat about or playdates to set up, yet they carry the love and grief with them always. Becca says it best. Ask about them. It makes all the difference. So in that spirit, I hope you can join me in this sacred space as we learn about Valor Emmanuel. All right, so today I'm here with Becca Cordes, and she is here to tell us her story with her son, Valor.
Hi, Stephanie. It's nice to be with you.
Hi, Becca. Nice to see you again. So tell us a little bit about your family's experience and your son.
Well, we had three children already, and we were pregnant with our fourth. And I don't know where to start it. We were excited and we weren't going to find out this time, you know, if we were having a boy or a girl. We kind of kept it a secret longer just to be fun. And we ended up not telling anybody we were pregnant until about 20 weeks. And then we went into our anatomy scan and we found out that there was some chromosomal abnormalities with him. He ended up having Edwards syndrome or trisomy 18. And from that point on, we just definitely had a rougher road with our pregnancy and had to have a lot more, it was different kind of pregnancy. There was a lot more that we had to put into considering what his life would be like if he were to survive. And he ended up being stillborn at 36 weeks, so.
Yeah, so what was that like, having that diagnosis and having to make those decisions for your family?
So we found out around 19 or 20 weeks. We went into the anatomy scan and we took all three kids with us. I think they came to almost every appointment. We always included them. But this appointment was definitely different. The gal at first was like, you know, I'm new here. It's my first time with this machine. So just bear with me, be patient. And I kind of took that into account, but it took 2 hours for an anatomy scan. And I'm like, this is weird. And then the end, this other gal came in and she's like, oh, I missed a couple of shots. But I think we got everything. And then it dawned on me later, like they never said, oh, baby looks great. They said, we got all the pictures we needed. So I go home and take a nap and I get woken up with a phone call from my OB's office. And she's like, hey, the midwife wants to see you today. And I'm like, well, that's not good. That's usually bad news. And my husband and his friends were doing some outdoor projects. So I just was like, you know, I'll just go in. I'm sure it's nothing. I'll just talk with Julie. And I ended up getting a couple of my girlfriends to go with me. And that was when she was like, I'm not gonna beat around the bush. I know you're very direct. And she's like, you know, we're looking at baby and he doesn't look healthy. Well, she didn't say we didn't know what it was yet, but she said, baby doesn't look healthy. There were some genetic markers that they saw. That's my teddy in the background, sorry. He had a cyst on his brain. He had a hole in his heart. He had clenched fists, rocker bottom feet, and he was measuring about 2 weeks smaller than he should have been. And so at that point, she said, we were going to send you to maternal fetal medicine in Eugene. And we went there the next day where we repeated our anatomy scan and they gave us our options. And at that point, me and my husband just have a personal conviction that termination was off the table. So we wanted to know where we could go from there with the best care. We ended up that summer seeing the maternal fetal doctor in Eugene once a week. So we drive 2.5 hours both ways. And we went up to OHSU every 3 weeks. We had different specialists from NICU doctors. We had a whole team in Portland. We had cardiologists. We had repeated ultrasounds. That was our summer a couple years ago, just trying to get him to be born to where we could actually meet him. We knew he probably wasn't going to survive, but we wanted to meet him.
Yeah.
So it was rough. Yeah.
How was that emotionally for you, kind of knowing that you may not get the chance to meet him, or that, you know, he was going to have such a hard time?
Well, I'm a planner, so it was really hard for me. There came a point where I just had to give it up. We're believers. There was a point where I was just like, you know, God, you have to take this. The hardest part for me, I think even harder than his death, was during the pregnancy, not knowing and second guessing if I was making the right decisions. There were so many options and there were so many different ways to tackle what his medical issues would be. That it was like, are we making the right choice? What's best for him? What's best for our whole family? And always like just second guessing, like, should we have done this? Should we have gone this route? You know, we had everything planned out as much as we could, but then you're still second guessing, like, could we have done more? Do we need to line up this doctor? That was really rough on us emotionally. I think I lost a lot more sleep during my pregnancy, just knowing that, you know, his diagnosis was terminal, but also like, was I doing everything I could for him at the time? It was really hard emotionally. We always included our children. They went to most of our appointments. They got to ask questions too. We showed them videos of babies and kids who are thriving with this diagnosis, who are still living. But it is a big life-changing event where, you know, you might have a child who's tube-fed or in a wheelchair or bedridden or is in occupational therapy several times a week. The amount of physical problems that they have and mental problems differs from child to child. So explaining to them, even if your baby sibling lives, life is going to be so much different. And that was really hard for us emotionally, of just like, you grieve it twice. You grieve the diagnosis and what could be and what you might lose. And then you grieve them again when they pass away.
Right. Yeah. It's such a complex experience of a long drawn out process of wanting to do everything you can and also having kids who you still need to support and help through the whole process, even though we don't know, we don't always know how to help ourselves. What would you say to that sibling experience? Because I know, right, you had three kids. Did they process differently? Was that hard for you to help them?
They did. At the time, during that summer, I had an 8 almost 9-year-old. I had a 6-year-old and I had a 3-year-old. So my oldest son is my feeler. He is a pretty sensitive kid, and he was definitely old enough to understand when we explained it to him, like, you know, your baby sibling might not live. And it was just explaining to him, your baby sibling might not live. And he went through a really hard time with that. He had a lot of questions. He was the one who looked the most forward to interacting with the baby and, you know, being old enough to change diapers or help out. And that was really hard for him. My middle daughter, or my middle child, my daughter, she definitely internalized more, I think, and just like she went through it, and I don't think she wanted to be a burden on us with her emotions, so she kind of stuffed her feelings more. It was harder to get her to talk about him. And then my youngest son just had a lot of questions, and I think he processed it the easiest and the best out of all of us, because he just came at it with this really small childlike mentality where he was like, okay, that makes sense. We'll just see baby in heaven. You know, like it just made more sense to him. But me and my husband also processed it very differently. I have to talk about things to process and to grieve and to make sense of them. And he is very much like he has to go and be in a quiet place and think to himself. So if anything, that made our marriage a lot stronger through this, because we both gave each other that space to grieve differently. And we were there for each other when we needed, because at certain times he did need to talk about it. And I was the person that he would talk to. But it's hard when you're grieving, but you also feel like you have to help others process their grief too, because everybody's feeling it differently.
You can't just take the time to focus on yourself, even though you are the one carrying everything, literally, and you're still holding your family together too.
Yeah, we had a lot of support when we went through this with our church and everything. They would help us monetarily with our trips back and forth. They helped us so much, just being there for us, bringing meals for us. We had a lot of outside support with our friends. But you still, when you go through it, you kind of have to be in your own family unit for a while, and you have to just sit in it. And that was probably the hardest part, was knowing that the world around you still is going, but your world stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a deep emotional place that people can't get invited into. I know that was one of the kind of prep questions we talked about, is did you feel isolated? Did you feel like you could find support? How did you find people to relate to and help you?
We had a really good group of friends at the time. That I had a friend who had gone through baby loss in her own story, and she was really there for us. You do feel isolated because you don't feel like anybody can relate to you and your pain at that time. And then at the same time, you are a little isolated because you don't want to unload all your grief on people at once. I remember this was before COVID. We would do grocery pickup because I knew all of the checkers at our grocery store, and they knew I was pregnant, and I couldn't go in there without a baby. It was so heartbreaking for me to go in there and to explain myself. And I remember the guy carried the groceries out to my car, and I just said, thank you so much for doing this. And he's like, oh, it's no problem. And I unloaded on him that my baby had just died, and it meant the world to me that he carried my groceries out. And then I cried on his shoulder. It was so awkward, but it's like, you feel isolated because you don't want to do that to people. You just kind of feel like nobody can relate to your pain. So you have to just go through it enough to resume some sort of a normal life. But the people that you let in are usually the people that can relate to you on that level. I know that was our story. The people that were the closest to us, through that time were people who had lost babies or who understood what it was like to go through that grief.
Yeah, it's such a strange world to walk through where you don't want to just feel everything out with everyone, but there's no stopping it either. It's just your whole world for sure. I know I mentioned, I think related to this is sometimes people think about what you've been through as kind of their worst nightmare or the thing that they dread the most. Wonder what you would say to those people who wonder if they would survive it or who think about how did you do this seemingly unaccomplishable thing?
For us, it was just part of our story. Just for us, we didn't want to come out of this with any regrets. So we always, and especially me, I think because I was carrying him, I always felt this extreme protectiveness over him. And I didn't want anything to hurt my baby, knowing that every second that I had him was precious. I didn't want to regret not making the best decisions I could. And that was the hardest part, was just like, when you go through it, you're not thinking about the long term. You're thinking about like, what am I going to do to get through the next day? That's a hard question to answer. You do get through it. And if you go through, hard stuff like that, it's hard to see the end of it or how you come out of it, or will I ever stop feeling this sad? And you do, it just becomes part of your story. And your grief is not going to be linear. It's not going to be, I can predict when this is going to trigger me. You know, there's going to be times like if I see his name was Valor Emmanuel. And if I see the word Valor, I just, I kind of stop for a second and I just have to like sit in it, you know, but You do get through it and you will see in color again. Like my friend told me, you will see in color again. It just takes time. For us, that was probably the hardest thing we've gone through as a family, as a couple. But it did make us stronger and it made us closer. And it opened up so many conversations in our family about how we process and how we deal with our emotions. It led to, I think, being closer to our kids. You definitely appreciate everything else so much more when you lose something so close. Mm-hmm. So there was good things that came out of that season of our life, and him being a part of our story was not this sad thing. It's like when I remember him, I remember all the good things and that we get to see him again someday. But yeah, I don't know. It's just part of our story now.
I think that's a great answer though. Just to say, you know, I'm still living, I'm still breathing. And sometimes that's all you're doing, but it's enough. And that it becomes a part of this beautiful framework of what you get to share with people and deepen your family relationships. Tell me about his name. How did you pick it and what does it mean to you?
So we weren't going to find out the gender. We wanted it to be a surprise. We had never done that before. And then after we received the diagnosis, we drove home from Eugene and I looked at my husband and I said, this baby needs an identity. I have to call their name, and like, they have to have an identity of some sort. I can't just keep saying the baby. So we were driving home and we had asked during that second anatomy scan, we wanted to know the sex at that point. And so she said, it's a boy, which of course was harder for us because boys with trisomy 18 fare a lot worse usually than girls with trisomy 18. So that was hard for us to process. We were driving home and I said, babe, what about Valor? Because we can never agree on names ever. We're like, it takes us forever to have babies. And I said, he has to be strong and courageous. We have to fight this and we have to fight for him. And he said, yes, absolutely. And then we had talked about middle names and we threw around some, and we ended up settling on Emmanuel, which means God with us. So we knew at that point that that would be his name, that we wouldn't be alone through this, and that we were going to fight for him. So his name was Valor Emmanuel.
It's so beautiful. I love it. What would you say, having joined the baby loss community, what would you say to people who want to know how to support someone in that role, or people who are maybe just joining it?
Oh man, I had a lot of resources, but my biggest help was friends who have gone through it. I truly believe that we go through things in our life that are really, really hard so that we can help others who are going to go through that same situation. We had some friends who had lost babies either through miscarriage or through stillbirth or through child death, and they reached out to us, and it meant the world to us to know that we just weren't alone, because a lot of people won't touch that subject. They won't talk about it openly with others. And when people ask me how many kids I have, I tell them 5. I don't have 4. I have another one now that we had after Valor. So they see 4, but I have 5 children. So just opening up that conversation was huge when people would say, we lost a baby at 20 weeks. We lost a baby at 5 weeks. You know, we lost a child to SIDS. Just having them reach out meant so much. Just knowing that you're not isolated, you're not alone, and they understand, so you can talk freely about it. The other thing that really helped me, I know, was I had some books that I was reading. Zoe Clark Coates is an incredible author. She has some great books about baby loss and just processing it. And she's out of the UK, but her stuff is just so inclusive to everybody going through those. And she covers a range of topics for baby loss. And then just like having people sit in it with us, just people saying, that would say, I can't relate to what you're going through, but can you tell me about him? Just having people who would say, I know it's going to hurt, but can you tell me about Valor? What did he look like? Sorry.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That meant a lot to us when people just wanted to say his name and talk about him and let us talk about him. And when they weren't uncomfortable, when we'd cry, because, you know, you talk about them and you do cry, and they wouldn't feel bad. They would just be like, it's okay, you could talk about him. That meant so much. I would say for anybody that knows somebody who is going through this, or has lost a baby or is going to lose a baby and has received that diagnosis, don't pull away from them. I know it's going to be uncomfortable for people that are supporting them, but don't stop reaching out, because that definitely, you tend to pull inward when you're going through it, and having people reach out means so much. Whether it's bringing them a meal, because that family's not going to be able to make the decision of what to cook for dinner for a while. Or stopping by with gifts for their other kids, just to make them feel included and knowing that your kids are grieving too. Mm-hmm. That meant so much.
Yeah. That's so wonderful to have people who can hold that with you and sit in it and just let you know they're still there.
Yeah.
You're holding a new little bundle. He's not super new, yeah. But what was it like to bring another kiddo into the world after that experience?
It had its own set of emotions with the added impact of COVID last year. And we had some complications with his pregnancy, some bleeding early on that definitely was triggering, but everything was fine. We ended up conceiving this little guy just a few months after Valor passed away. And it was both healing, but at the same time, you don't ever feel like you get to keep this one. Mm-hmm. You always have it in the back of your mind that it's happened before, and you know, you never think lightning strikes twice, but it's always in the back of your mind. But you just have to cherish every second, every milestone. I had a friend who really, really pushed me to, on the good days, just like really celebrate that and take the pictures, take the maternity pictures, celebrate this new life. And so we had this little guy, Mr. Theodore, my teddy bear. We had him just a few weeks shy of Valor's first birthday. Mm-hmm. So it was healing to get to hold a baby in my arms again and to nurse him and to comfort him. But you always wonder in the back of your mind, like, what would Valor be doing right now? You know, yeah. How would he be with his little sibling? And that's hard.
Yeah, those parts don't disappear with time. They just...
No. And it was hard last year too, because going through a pregnancy after a loss, your husband also is processing this. And it was hard because of COVID. He couldn't go to almost all of my appointments. He wasn't allowed to go to the anatomy scan and to see this baby was okay and the heartbeat was okay. And that was really hard for both of us. We ended up switching to a home birth late in the pregnancy just so we could have a redeeming birth with Teddy. It had been so beautiful and traumatic at the same time for us to deliver Valor. At the hospital, we wanted to be as far away from that as we could. And thank God everything went okay and he was healthy. And it was a really redeeming birth for us just to have something different and something beautiful out of a tragedy. And it was really healing.
Yeah. He's so sweet. Asleep on your shoulder. I know listeners won't see, but he's very cute. Did it feel like the trauma piece was overwhelming, or was something that surprised you, or that you've needed some extra support around?
I definitely did. Most of our family has been in therapy at some point or another over this last year after going through a pregnancy after Valor's. There was a lot of feelings. I just feel like the PTSD, the trauma afterwards, it hits you when you don't expect it. For me, I had to take my mom to a sleep study at the hospital not long after Valor had passed. And that was my first time going to a hospital since then. And the smells and going down the same hallway was very triggering for me. And I went home and I was just angry. And I didn't understand why until later it hit me. Like, I was kind of reliving it. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I put a name to it, like, okay, that's what it was. I'm just kind of having, you know, some emotions about that. I knew enough about myself that being in a hospital was going to take some time for me to be okay with. You don't know when it's going to hit you. Sometimes it could be something that reminds you of when you were on your way to a doctor's appointment. It could be driving past the doctor's office. It could be hearing their name. You never know what's going to hit you that day, but being in therapy has definitely helped. Just talking about it and having somebody else to tell you that that's normal, that that's what this process is going to require from you, has helped a lot.
Yeah, just a little orientation around what that looks like. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, any last thoughts or things that you feel are important to share about your story and your beautiful family?
Just don't stop fighting for your kids. As a mom, you know what's best for your children. And I would say, just don't let anybody take that away from you. you know what's best for you and your family and your kids, and always listen to that intuition and fight for what you believe.
Love it. Got chills. Well, thank you for telling us your story and spending your time with me. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. Such a beautiful, beautiful story and such a strong family. Thank you to Becca and her family for welcoming us into their world. She shared a whole list of resources with me that helped her, so be sure to check the episode notes for those. One of the things I brought into this interview was that as a therapist, I sit with a lot of mamas who are expecting, and a story like this is what they fear. It's what their anxiety goes to, and the narrative is, I can't handle that. I know from my own experience as a special needs mom that those words can be pretty cutting to someone who had no choice but to handle it. I wanted to ask the question as gently as I could, and hear in her own words, how did you survive? I knew it would be a tough thing to ask and probably even a tougher thing to answer. And the truth is, there's no playbook, no right way or wrong way to keep going. You just keep going. You have faith that there is a light ahead. And as long as the road keeps going, it just becomes a part of the story. For those of us on the outside, we get to show up. Keep checking in, keep encouraging, keep remembering. Thanks for joining us today. Take good care. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I hope it was inspiring and encouraging for you and your journey. If you enjoyed it, I love it if you could share it with your friend, subscribe for future content, and leave us a 5-star review. This will help us grow our reach so others can join our community of support. If you would like to share your unique story with the Challenge Accepted community, feel free to reach out to me on social media, Stephanie Lucas MFT, on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for being a part of our team.